With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein your way.
And thank you to Jenny Green and the team for the soundtrack to our Thursday afternoon. It's Damien O'Mara and David Gillick. We're with you between now and 7 o'clock. It's Thursday, March 18th, and this is Game On.
Coming up today, we're live to Ruby in Cheltenham, who is joined by super sub Danny Mullins. Plus, we'll celebrate Rachel Blackmore's brilliance.
This is overwhelming, to be honest. I don't even know myself, to be honest, and I wish I could give you something really good, but I'm genuinely just so overwhelmed by these last few days. You know, it's all about the horses you're getting on, and I just feel so lucky to be riding for the people I'm riding for.
Republic of Ireland manager Stephen Kenny names his squad ahead of the upcoming World Cup qualification campaign.
We haven't been to the World Cup since 2002. You know, it's been a huge loss really from Irish life, and very hard to get there. And we're in a tough group with the European Championship holders, Portugal and Serbia. But we're away to Serbia on Wednesday, but we'll make sure we're absolutely ready, and we're looking forward to it.
In rugby, Andy Farrell has named his Irish side to face England in the Six Nations.
We're up against a very good side who played extremely well last week. The standard of the game, the French and the English game, was top-notch. I'm sure that they're hoping to put in a similar performance in. So for us, if that happens, we have to give an 80-minute performance. That's certainly the best of our competition so far.
We'll have our eye on America as well, as Jeff Shepherd pays tribute to Drew Brees. I knew I'd stumble over that.
Brees retiring, get this, exactly 15 years to the day after signing his deal there in New Orleans. And few have meant more to that city than him. Not just the Super Bowl MVP he won there or all the passing records. It's the tireless work in the community that Brees and his family have done that made him so admired there in the Big Easy.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Just for proof that we are live, I can say Drew Brees the rest of the time. You're going to have to say that later on.
You were practicing before we went live, yeah. And you're stumbling over as well.
Yeah, it's between that now and my dodgy Northside Dublin THs. This is going to keep me on my toes. David, it's great to see you. We've an awful lot to get stuck into between now and 7 o'clock. We're going to get straight down to business, though. We're going to go straight to Cheltenham. Ruby is there. He has a very special guest alongside him. And Ruby, another brilliant day for the Irish.
All that practicing, Damien, you don't need practice. And the man I had beside me didn't need any practice. As you say, another outstanding day for the Irish. 6 winners, won the Ryanair Chase and the featured Paddy Power Stairs Hurdle. And as you mentioned at the top, it was super sub Danny Mullins, who'd never even ridden for Gavin Cromwell before, let alone ridden Florian Porter, who rode to glory. Danny, it was spectacular to watch, and it must have been some feeling for you.
Unbelievable, you know, to get my first Cheltenham winner in a championship race like the Stairs Hurdle. It's unbelievable. And you know, as a late substitute, as you say, and credit to Johnny Moore and Gavin Cromwell for filling me in and all the information, which made my job easy.
You've been very kind, and crediting Johnny and, well, definitely Gavin, because you train him, and Johnny for telling you what to do. But you had to go and ride him, and he is a difficult ride, Florian Porter. I've watched him all through the summer and the winter. You'd never even sat in him before. How did you find him?
Yeah, he was good. You know, he's only a 6-year-old, and that was a big performance. Through the race, he was good. He's a very clever jumper, and while he can be a little bit bubbly early on in the race, you know, once it came to the point where I wanted him to take a breather and fill his lungs, he was quite intelligent underneath me and done that for me all the way down the hill. Got a little bit tight to the second last, and, you know, I was fairly happy how much horse I had left from there.
You've ridden 5 seconds at the Cheltenham Festival in the past. Did you ever think, this place is just not going to happen for me?
I often came out of it thinking I don't really enjoy this place sometimes, but, you know, I was always confident the day would come. You know, you keep riding to the best of your ability, and hopefully you land on the right horse to get the job done. And thankfully, it was a ride that came in the 11th hour today and got me off the mark.
When did you find out you were going to be riding Florian Porter?
Johnny Moore came in off the gallops this morning, and he said he was just too sore. He wasn't able to use himself at all. He told me he'd put my name forward to Gavin Cromwell. And then about an hour or two before the race, Gavin said that's all been cleared with the owners, and they were happy enough for me to take the ride and have a go. So, yeah, it was all fairly late.
That is fairly late, is right. Danny, Stairs Hurdle is an incredibly tough race to win. and you made all to win it. At any point down the hill between the third last and second last, heading to the that final climb home, did you ever think, this horse is going to get tired, he's going to fold, or were you always confident he'd get there?
No, I was fairly confident throughout. His jumping was very good, and at that point, about 5-6 furlongs out, he took a good blow. I just wanted him to fill his lungs to allow him to have enough petrol to get all the way up the hill. Once I came down across the road, heading for the last, I was still just keeping him balanced and moving forward without going for him. I was expecting more horses to come around me, and I was planning on sitting until they got upside me, until I didn't want to commit till the last second. You know, he'd put up a good performance, going fairly hectic fractions in the early part of the race. Once he'd filled his lungs, I was happy enough I'd have a little bit left to go again at the back of the last.
And he did, and he went all the way to the line. Tomorrow, Danny, in the big one, the Blue Ribbon event, the Cheltenham Gold Cup, the Wellchild Cheltenham Gold Cup this year, which is a marvellous initiative from Cheltenham Racecourse. You're right, Kenboy, you won the Irish Gold Cup on him. Similar tactics, similar ride, similar execution?
You'd like to think so, you know. You take every day as it comes, but around Leopardstown the last day, he was very good on the front end. There's going to be a lot more pace in the Gold Cup, so, you know, it's all about getting into a nice rhythm early on. Again, it's a stay-in race, and you need to jump well through the early part of it to leave yourself in a good position so as you can have enough petrol to go again late on. But, you know, I like Kenboy's chance, and he's coming there in great shape.
Obviously, Alboon Ford, who was trying to win a third Gold Cup, he is a stable companion of the others. Where do you see the dangers coming from?
I think a Plutard could be the improving horse. The Bromhead team have their horses in fantastic shape, and he obviously beat Kenboy in Leopardstown at Christmas. That form line is quite good. While there's only a half length splitting them, he probably rates as the main danger to Alboon Photo, and Alboon Photo is the one we all have to go and beat. He's twice a winner. He's following the same route that he has in previous seasons, winning in Tremor. But, you know, it's a horse race at the end of the day, and I'll do my best to beat him on Kenboy.
I'm sure you will. Danny, thanks a million for coming to join us. Go and have your dinner and a well-earned rest. Damien, it was an unbelievable day in Prestbury Park today in the Cotswolds, and the dominance, the absolute dominance of the Irish racehorses, of Irish racing, was incredible to witness.
Yeah, but Ruby, I don't want to be disingenuous, and I don't want to take away at all from the achievement, because aside from the opening race, it's been a clean sweep along the way. But are we, at what point does the conversation need to talk about not the dominance of the Irish, but perhaps the weakness of the English competition? Or is that a fair way of looking at it?
It is. There's two sides to every coin, and I'm sure that's the way they're looking at it. But why do they end up in a weak position is the other question. And that is the strength of Irish horse racing. It's the money that HRI pump into prize money in Ireland. When you look at the winners over the last couple of days and look at the owners, a lot of them are people based in the UK that are investing in Ireland, that have their horses running in Ireland. It's just as easy for them to have those horses trained in England where they can drive to the races and watch them, but they don't. They're having them in Ireland. It's the strength of Irish horse racing, Damien, I think, that has made the English that bit weaker.
But I don't think anyone would have predicted that level of dominance today.
It's been coming, and it didn't happen overnight, but it's slowly been building to in this direction. I mean, it's been a strange year in every sport for everybody, but you know, English prize money was hit again this year because of no crowds. It's a completely different funding system in the UK. It all comes from the levy. In Ireland, we're lucky to be government funded, but they're getting a return on their money, and this investment is working. From where I know, I'm blinkered, but I think it's working.
Yeah, and I think the results today go to show it certainly is. And I suppose we'll talk about the successes, but an awful lot of the focus is going to be on Envoy Alan, and it could have been a clean sweep were it not for a fall in the opener.
Yeah, and look, he, for whatever reason, looked a little bit overexcited today. He was on edge, and he raced too keenly, too enthusiastically early with Jack Kennedy, and he just stood way too far off the third fence and got his feet on top of it and ended up tripping himself over then on landing. It was disappointing, and it was disappointing for Jack, but you know, I love watching people pick themselves up and go again. He picked himself up after Envoy Allen fell, went out to ride Fury Road in the Paddy Power Stairs hurdling. He ran bad, yet he went and gave Mount Ida an incredible ride in the last race of the day in the Kimmure. You know, I know he's a young man, his injuries have been well documented, but he keeps bouncing back, and to keep going again. David will tell you the same. It's not as easy as it looks, but he picked himself up and went again.
No, absolutely. Ruby, anything else that kind of stood out for you today?
I think, look, there's no doubt who the star of the show has been here, and that's Rachel Blackmore. And the way she's riding her performances. Alaho today was amazing, and Rachel rode him from pillar to post. The speed he went, the gallop he went, the way he attacked his fences, and then she went out 2 hours later on Tell Me Something Girl and rode the complete opposite race. Rode her from the back, made all the right decisions, picked her way through. And people say, oh, it's confidence, and it is confidence, and she's doing the right things tactically. But what I admire her for is her resilience. She got 3 falls here yesterday as well. 2 of them weren't too bad, but she got a crunching fall in the second last race yesterday, picked herself up, bounced out today as if nothing had happened. She got a fall in the last race today. Yet I saw her walking back into the hotel here now, and she's just ready to go again tomorrow. I think her physical achievement and resilience is admirable.
And Brian Cooper, another example of redemption?
Yeah, and Brian, look, he had a huge job at Jigginstown, got a very bad fall here, 2013 or 14, and broke his leg. And it was a terrible break. He ended up in hospital in Bristol for maybe 6 weeks. There was a chance at one stage, like, he might lose the bottom part of his leg. The fracture was that bad. He didn't. And shortly after that, then his mentor, Desi Hughes, passed away, where Brian had started his career. And things just unraveled for him from there. And he has found a way back. He sat down and had a long conversation with himself, turned his career around with the support of the guys he rode for today, Paul Nolan and his brother James, and he's built his career back up. And it was great to see him delivering on Mrs. Milner as well.
It's interesting, Ruby, you know, obviously there's competition involved between the trainers and between the jockeys, but again, the sense, and it shone through when you were on horses rather than watching them from afar, the level of enjoyment and satisfaction that people within the racing community get from the success of others and the achievements of others, because you ultimately have the greatest understanding what Danny Mullins has gone through, what Brian Cooper is going through, maybe as well the attention that Rachel Blackmore is dealing with, for somebody who I always get the impression would like to be anywhere other than in front of a microphone or in front of a camera.
Yeah, and you're right, but I think because racing is the greatest leveller in the world. Like, you look even Rachel yesterday, like, ride a winner, get creased off the ground. It's just racing always levels you, and people within racing are well aware of that. So they never get over excited or get carried away with themselves, and then they're happy for somebody else when they have success, because they know how up it can be, how down it can be, and we're all trying to stay in the middle. And then it's support. There is, of course, there's rivalry. There isn't an inch given. I mean, Rachel Blackmore and Paul Townend will be good friends, but when you watched them riding yesterday's Ballymore, they were the fiercest competitors.
Just give us a brief idea then of what it is you're looking forward to most tomorrow, or, you know, can tomorrow possibly live up to what we've seen today?
I think it can. I mean, I look at the Triumph Hurdle. You have Colixius and Zana here against Tritonic. And in the Albert Bartlett, you have Statler and Fakira are 2 massive runners. The County Hurdle is a handicap. We've got lots of chances there. And then you've got the Gold Cup. Ireland have 4, if not 5 big bullets in that. Album Photo, Manila Indo, Aplu Tar, Kemboy against Champ for the English. And that's really the way it boils down. The Hunter's Chase, we've got plenty of chances. The Mrs. Paddy Power Chase, Ireland will definitely win that. It could be. I have never quite saw the dominance that we're seeing this week ever. Never thought it would happen, but it is happening, and I think it's brilliant to watch.
Yeah, and yeah, you're enjoying it. Can I just ask you though, I you know, going back, I don't know how many years at this stage, you know, your father used to join us on Radio 1 in the evenings, and we were talking about the Irish dominance and how the English were getting more and more annoyed at the Irish dominance, yet here we are perhaps 10 years on and there hasn't been anything done about it. So have we gone beyond the tipping point where somebody is going to seize this by the neck and try and salvage it from an English point of view, or is there just too many issues that need to be navigated to get them to the level that we're at?
There's plenty of levels, but like anything in life, Damon, you have to look at what the opposition are doing and try to catch up. You can't just say that's not fair. Life isn't fair. You have to catch up, and when people raise the bar, it improves everybody else. And that's what will happen. There's very good trainers in the UK. Paul Nicholls, Nicky Henderson, they're master trainers. But they just, the whole sport needs to be improved.
But is it that they're lacking that kind of collegiate is the wrong word to use, but are they lacking that body like the HRI or whoever else it is who just
is seizing it and trying to drive it through?
Well, is that the problem, that it's like the United Nations of horse racing?
Yeah, UK Racing, United. Yeah, there's that many bodies in charge in the UK. It is quite difficult, but like, it is a level playing field as such, Damien. I mean, before the meeting started, there was 28 anti-post favourites. They'd all been on the open market at some stage. Anybody could have bought them. So it's not like they're just only the Irish can get them. They were there for everybody. And it's the Irish people who are buying them, the trainers that are spotting them, the bloodstock agents that are spotting them, the investors that are coming in to pay for them. They just seem to be landing in Ireland right now.
Okay. Ruby, we'll let you go off and enjoy the evening. Thanks for being with us, as always.
Cheers, Damien. Thanks, David.
Cheers, Ruby. Ruby Walsh with us there. So, fair play to him, getting the big names on the radio over the course of the week.
He's good at that. He's well connected.
I was going to say he's a neck, like a, you know, you can finish the sentence yourself, but sure, if he can't get them on, nobody can get them on. Would you be a man who'd sit down and watch Cheltenham of an afternoon now, or...
No, I'll be honest, you kind of, you know, when the big championships and festivals roll around, you do kind of get a little bit interested in it. But generally from month to month, not a huge interest in it. But you get sucked into it, you do. And I think, you know, when you talk about the Irish dominance in anything, that kind of, you know, it fires you up a bit. And when you see the headlines, and particularly this week with the whole Paddy's Day and all that, I suppose the big difference is that there's no crowds there. You know, we'd all know people who'd be heading over and getting into that buzz of the week in Cheltenham, etc. So from that perspective, like all sport, you know, there's no spectators, but you know, people are kind of following it from afar, and obviously the headlines speak for themselves. You know, we're having a good week.
We have a lot to get stuck into over the course of the programme. I was going to talk to you about Tokyo, but we'll come to that later on. Ruby kind of, I won't say he ambushed us, but when you get the word to say Ruby has Danny Mullins alongside him, you kind of do away with the chit chat at the top of the programme. So we'll chat about that. We're going to look to the Irish team name today to face England at the Aviva Stadium on Saturday. Shep on US Sport, and we are going to reflect on Stephen Kenny's Irish squad for the upcoming World Cup qualifiers as named today, and we'll do that after the break.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm, a 100% natural range of cooked chicken, turkey and beef. Natural protein your way.
Game on football.
And you're very welcome back to the programme. So we have the minor matter of Ireland's World Cup qualification campaign getting underway next week, and the Republic of Ireland manager Stephen Kenny today named his squad for the upcoming games against Serbia and Luxembourg, and all of the headlines revolve around the four goalkeepers who've been named in the squad. Liverpool's Kevin Kelleher, subject to fitness, Mark Travers of Bournemouth, Kieran O'Hara of Burton Albion, alongside Gavin Bazunu, who's doing phenomenal work on loan at Rochdale from Manchester City, Aaron Connolly to be assessed by the medical staff, James McLean to be assessed by the medical staff, and Troy Parrott features as well, having been called up by Stephen Kenny. Tony O'Donoghue, our soccer correspondent, is with us. Tony, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you guys?
Not too bad. It's good to talk to you. We're joined by Fergal Brennan as well, who we'll bring in just a minute. Tony, I know we're keeping you away from Spurs in the Europa League.
I have it on the iPad here next to me.
Come on, priorities, Tony. See, and they say men can't multitask. Dinamo Zagreb, Tottenham Hotspur, scoreless, as is the game between Arsenal and Olympiacos. Man United away to AC Milan later. Rangers at home to Slavia Prague. And I think that is it done and dusted for the British teams. Tony, Stephen Kenny, I have to say, I was reading the live tweeting that was going on from the press conference today. No sense of ambiguity around anything. Asked straight questions, gave straight answers. A lot of focus on the goalkeepers and a sense today that it's effectively Kevin Kelleher's jersey to give away if he can prove his fitness.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? Darren Randolph has been ever-present in competitive fixtures for 38 in a row. That's a huge amount of experience to lose. We're going to likely, if Kevin Kelleher proves his fitness, he has that abdominal strain, he will make his debut for Ireland in a World Cup qualifier in Belgrade. Now, it's going to be tough for him, no question about that, probably one of the more difficult places to go, but at least he's shown in his appearances for Liverpool in the Champions League and in the few appearances in the Premier League that he has the temperament for that. But it's a huge ask for such a young man. And Stephen made it clear that if he's fit, and I think their fingers are, and toes are crossed, that it will be Creevan Kelleher. Maybe Travers is at the moment seen as a second pick, but he was very quick to praise Bazunu as well, because he's known him, of course, since he broke on the scene as a 16-year-old with Shamrock Rovers, and he's played, I think, about 20 times with the 21s. And at the moment, he's a Manchester City player out on loan with Jimmy Barry Murphy's Rochdale. And he's certainly been busy there, but he seems to have the temperament as well. And there is a real sense that there's a changing of the guard. Some of this because he's been forced into it. You know, we're missing key players. I mentioned Randolph, John Egan missing as well, James McCarthy missing. Adam Eda, who's a player that he's already decided if he's fit, he'll probably play him. Jack Byrne and Harry Arthur. So he's kind of been forced in a way, but he's also, I think, embracing that. This is going to be a new wave of Irish players. And it was interesting the way he was explaining it today as well. He was talking about these 12 players in the squad that have come through the system, come from their schoolboys clubs. He mentioned Creevan Kelleher, and straight away he mentioned Ringmahon Rangers. He talked about Dar O'Shea and St. Kevin's. He talked about Ryan Manning and Merivew. He talked about Jay Malumbi and Villa FC from Waterford, Jason Knight from Cabinteely. He even mentioned Ronan Curtis from Derry, Aaron Connolly from Merivew, and Troy Parrott. He didn't mention Tottenham Hotspur. He didn't mention Ipswich Town. He mentioned Belvedere. So, like, he's trying to thread all the bits of Irish football together. And that could take longer than one World Cup qualifying campaign, and a very difficult one. It's come about really quickly. And you know what? By the middle of November, it'll be all over. I mean, you know, it starts next Wednesday. Normally, there's a few weeks to, you know, a provisional squad is named, then it's cut down. But these guys will gather in Manchester on Sunday. They'll train in Manchester on Monday and then head to Belgrade. And already it's the first game. It's a huge game. Serbia have a new manager. They've got, I think, a really tough start. They've got Ireland, who, you know, Ireland and Serbia will undoubtedly be seen as looking for that second spot in the group. Then Serbia have to play Portugal. Then they have to play Azerbaijan. They could be out of contention after three games, and hopefully they will be if Ireland can come back from Belgrade with 3 points.
Fergal, you obviously look, these players that Tony's mentioned, and looking a little bit from the lower leagues, when you look at the squad, there's a lot of youth, there's a lot of players in the lower leagues. It's a big step up. Can they and will they be able to perform at that level?
I think the key part is what Tony mentioned there, temperament, and particularly with someone like Kelleher. When you've seen him play this season and in the Champions League, he played against Ajax, he played against Midtjylland, and he was so calm, he was so composed. When the saves needed to be made, he was there, he was organising the defence around him, he was distributing the ball brilliantly. And as you say, there are obviously quite a few younger players that have come through, the under-18s, the 21s, that Stephen would have known from his time in charge there as well. And I think he knows that a change is needed. The average age of the Ireland squad is towards the higher end of most European nations. He knows that there is going to be surgery needed in the next couple of seasons, whether that's him still in charge if he extends his contract. So it's always a very difficult one to bring in young players, and particularly, as you say, when some of them are playing at Championship or League One level, because there is always that associated risk, whether they'll freeze on the night, whether they'll be given the chance, whether it'll be detrimental to their development if they're thrown in too quickly. But I think for the likes of Kelleher and particularly Troy Parrott, who we've been hearing so much about for what seems like a lifetime now, based on how highly rated he was by the backroom team at Spurs, there has to be a chance, there has to be a moment for these players. And I think Stephen has looked at that in the sense of, if not now, then when? Troy Parrott is a great example of that. If we're to wait for Troy Parrott to be the starting centre forward for Tottenham, we could be waiting a long time. These are players that need their chance. They, you know, in the examples of Bazunu and Parrott and one or two others, they've listened to their club managers, they've listened to what Stephen Kenny has said and gone out on loan so that they're playing and putting themselves in the shop window for selection. I think in terms of the starting 11 in Belgrade for this game, I wouldn't expect an enormous amount of changes. I think, as Tony said, Darren Randolph missing is massive. I'd expect Kelleher to come in and replace him in nets. But Kenny has got his trusted kind of foot soldiers through that team. He spoke at the start of his reign about Ireland having one of the best defences in Europe. He's been quite steadfast in that. If John Egan was in the squad, he'd be playing. I don't think there'll be a massive amount of changes to that. And moving through the team, for me, there's probably only three, maybe four fitness, depending on Aaron Connolly and James McLean, four spots in the starting 11 that are really up for grabs. Jeff Hendrick and Conor Hourihan have been regulars for Stephen Kenny since he's come in. I'd expect them to keep their places. So there's only really a couple of spaces that I think Stephen will be looking at in that training squad in Manchester and thinking, you forced your way into the 11 here.
And Tony, just, you know, when you talk about, and Fergal's talking about the starting 11, where are goals going to come from?
That is the question, isn't it? I mean, Shane Duffy. He mentioned Shane Duffy because he's had such a torrid time of it. It's been a real low point in his career, and the move to Celtic hasn't worked out for him so far. And yet, you know, he said he's in regular contact. He's had a tough time. Very few careers are plain sailing. And you always get tough moments, and he's had that this year, certainly, but he's never let Ireland down. But I think it might be the time to give Shane Duffy a rest, and it's a time to see, like, Daryl O'Shea in the side, and Kieran Clark has been playing regularly as well. But that, you know, that changes completely the emphasis on the team. We will have a new goalkeeper, Seamus Coleman. Will he start if the whole Doherty issue comes around again? But when you talk about goals, he believes in Aaron Connolly. Aaron Connolly has had a difficult enough time. It'll be interesting to see if he plays for Brighton this weekend. Obviously, he was under some suspension. He was found guilty of a transgression, certainly in terms of COVID, maybe against company policy, against club rules. He also is allegedly has a rib injury, but I got the sense today he feels that he'll be okay. So I think he believes in Connolly. He thinks he carries a goal threat. He carries genuine pace. Will he be brave enough to play Connolly and Parra together? That's something that he's done at under 21 level. But it is a very inexperienced Irish team. He gave good mention to Josh Cullen as well. He's gone to watch Josh Cullen in the past. He's playing regularly for Anderlecht in the Belgian League. And that's someone that he's name checked quite a few times as well. But goals undoubtedly have been the issue for Ireland and will remain so. For Serbia, I mean, they have an interesting situation of a new manager coming into his first game in charge, Dragan Stojkovic, a bit of a Yugoslav legend, and he's been brave enough to leave out players that Ireland would be delighted to have, the likes of Kolarov, ex-Manchester City, now with Inter Milan. Also, the Crystal Palace player, Milivojevic. So, Matic has retired. Is this the time where they get the new manager bounce that we were hoping for from Stephen Kenny? Or is this the time to play them? I think it could be a good time to play them, in fact. But it's certainly going to be a new-look Ireland team, an 11 that has never played before.
But just, Tony, on that, talking about new starts and fresh starts, it's a new calendar year, it's a new campaign. And how important is it for Stephen Kenny just to get up and running and to get away from seating plans on planes and motivational videos and injuries and COVID and everything else? And, like, he must be desperate, and Irish football is desperate, just for a couple of good results, good performances, to completely change the narrative, which can happen very, very quickly.
Yeah, but I think any kind of panic stations would be wrong. He has been dealt a cruel hand. There's no question about that. Wembley Gate, has it gone away at this point? I did ask him about Damien Duff, and he really wasn't biting with that one, you know. An amazing player, he said. He's made his decision for private reasons, and we respect that. But, you know, there's so much change in the backroom staff. Anthony Barry comes in, assistant coach at Chelsea, and Dean Kiley comes in looking after the referees, and they will be hoping new faces, fresh start. The COVID thing crucified us, you know. I mean, he made the point again today that we had stricter criteria than any other country, than most of the clubs that travel around Europe still, going to wherever to play the European fixtures, via the Europa or Champions League. We still maintain the 2 metre rule in the air, and that caught us out, with the likes of Connolly missing that crucial game in Slovakia because of COVID regulations. And he said at this point, you know, to be fair, a lot of our players have actually had COVID. So maybe the circus can you know, calm down, and we can concentrate on the football. All the other things, you know, Wembley Gate, COVID restrictions, walkouts, whatever, hopefully they'll be gone, and this is a new time. But as I said, you know, eight games. We'll have this wrapped up. It starts next Wednesday. It'll be finished by the middle of November. I mean, there's been times in the past that, you know, our World Cup qualifying campaigns have taken 18 months and more, when you include the likes of the playoff with Iran back in 2001 for the 2002 World Cup. So this will be done rather quickly. And then you have the addition of the Qatar game in this particular window. You'll wonder, I mean, I don't care how we are shaped once we get points out of the first two games, because Luxembourg at home won't be easy either, that's for sure.
Fergal, as a man who obviously keeps a keen eye on Irish football but is based beyond this island, what's the perception of the Irish national team and, you know, where we sit in the grand scheme of European football?
I think there's still obviously a lot of attention due to the amount of players that are playing Premier League or Championship. I think Stephen Kenny coming in from the, as you say, from the wider context of football fans looking at him, they might not have really known too much about his background. There might have had to be a bit of research done into that. But I think most football fans that are interested in not just what's in front of them and want to know more about Irish football and the development of the game and Stephen Kenny's role from grassroots through the underage system have been quite impressed with him. I've spoken to quite a few people who've, you know, as I say, looked into him, read about him, listened to him, and they're quite impressed with how assured he is when he speaks about football and his plans, not just for the senior team, but for this idea of a conveyor belt of talent right the way through the system, getting into the first team. And I think that is beneficial for everyone involved. It's beneficial for us as Ireland fans. It's beneficial for the perception of Irish football and for the national team. And I think when somebody like him speaks, it's very immediately apparent that he's passionate about football, that he's, to borrow a bit of a cliche, he's a student of the game, he's interested in learning and developing his own coaching profile. And I think, as Tony Riley pointed out, it'd be incredibly unfair to judge Stephen Kenny based on the start that he's had at Ireland, as Ireland manager. There's absolutely no luck that he's had. He's had injuries, he's had COVID, he's had all sorts of problems to manage that. When you look at other situations with international teams and their managers, they haven't had that. They've had issues to deal with, but not on the same level that Stephen has had to, and particularly coming into a brand new position that he's done. So I think, as Tony rightly says, hopefully we'll see a bit of a fresh start, a bit of a blank page here. It's not ideal with certain important players, experienced players missing, but given that little bit of freshness of youth with experienced players dotted in the team, there is real cause for optimism that we can go away and get a result. We drew there in the qualification for the 2018 World Cup. A terrible night, pouring down rain, but we got a result, we got a point. And I think, given the fact that things have been so difficult in the opening few months of Kenny being in charge, only one goal scored, and that defeat at Wembley and the Wales game and the Finland defeat in Dublin, it has been difficult. Stephen's now got a chance to turn that around. And I think the players themselves, if they have a bit of a point to prove, that's an extra motivation for them, because they know that things have been hard, they've not given a full or proper representation of themselves. This is an opportunity to start again and put us on a strong footing to reach the World Cup in 2022.
Fergal, we'll let you go. Thanks for being with us, as always. Fergal Brennan there. Tony, before I let you go, I won't have time to get stuck into waxing lyrical about the League of Ireland, but I know your focus was on the senior squad today, but Jim Crawford naming an under-21 squad as well. 14 uncapped players, which shows the transition of the age grades. But, you know, two players based in the Bundesliga, which perhaps shows an indication that we're going to spread this net as far as we can spread it for players who feel an allegiance with this country and want to represent it.
Absolutely, and also to see League of Ireland players being called up as well. I think we're going to see more of this. This is good, and this is what we're hoping for. And West Ham's 18-year-old Ademipo Odubiko getting called up as well. That's important, because, I mean, there has been talk that he may be wavering in terms of nationality. We're going to see more and more of this in the future. Some really young, highly rated prospects, many of them with you know, a dual nationality, or with a decision to make regarding their nationality. And so I think that's great to see. And, you know, the further we can cast the net and the further our players can go to get the likes of Josh Cullen to get full-time decent football, all the better. But, you know, I think seeing Dawson Devoy and Andy Lyons join Bray Wanderers' Brian Maher in the under-21 squad is good as well. We really are hoping, and I'll finish with this, that we do get that positivity and injection of youth, because the likes of Daro Shea, who I think is odds on to start now, the likes of Jason Knight or Jason Malumbi, Parrott or Connolly, I mean, if we could spark in Serbia, if we could manage to get a goal and get a win, you know, it would really very quickly you know, wipe away all the controversy and all the hard luck and all the hardship. And what do they say? A good start is half the work done.
Yeah. How are Spurs getting on?
It's coming up to half time. It's still nil all, but I will remind you that they're 2-0 up from the first leg.
Smug. Tony, it's been a pleasure as always. Good to talk to you. Thanks for being with
us. Cheers, guys. Thanks.
That's Tony O'Donoghue, our soccer correspondent. Arsenal scoreless, and as mentioned, you're a Man United fan, aren't you?
No, I'm not.
Who are you? Oh, you're someone upset. Well, I was going to say, you're someone upset.
I was dying to ask the lads, you know, when you talk about, you know, picking the best players and you're looking at League One, Aidan McGeady.
Yeah, it's a case to be made.
I'm a Sunderland fan. And
I knew it was someone obscure.
He's turned the season around. They won the EFL trophy there last weekend, backed it up Wednesday night with a win. They're now third in League One, heading up.
Poor old Salford City won the EFL trophy on Saturday, which was last year's final. Yeah. And then Sunderland won this year's final on Sunday, wasn't it?
On Sunday, yeah.
So basically, Salford got the trophy for 24 hours, even. Yeah. That must be a record for the shortest ownership.
Did you not see the state of the trophy?
No, is it in bits, is it? What did they do to it?
No,
I don't want to know.
Clean it down anyway, COVID and all the rest of it. But yeah, it's a weird one, isn't it? It's crazy how it's all just manifested itself.
But come here, when you've got Scholes and Neville and whoever else, they can probably afford to buy 23 replica trophies and
I'm sure they
give it out to each one of the lads. Should make reference as well, the Serbia game next Wednesday is live here on Game on 2FM, and the Luxembourg game, which is the following Saturday, is live as part of an extended sport over on Radio 1, which will also have coverage of the Guinness Pro 14 final.
You're busy.
If you're not flogging it, Dave, if you're not selling, you're not living. Right, we've a break to take, and on the far side of this, we are going to hear from the Irish head coach Andy Farrell on the 6 changes he's made for the Ireland game against England in the Six Nations this Saturday.
FM. Game on 2FM with Green Fern. A quick and easy addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Welcome back to the programme. It's Damian O'Mara with David Gillick. We're here until 7 o'clock. We nearly missed the resumption of the programme because we're debating Aidan McGeady. 34 years of age, 24 appearances this year, 4 goals, but you're telling me his assists are through the roof.
Unreal. Of late, like, there's a lad up front, Charlie Wyke, who's banging them in, but all the assists are coming from McGeady. He's turned it around. They're going to get promoted now back in the Championship. And again, he was a player who was frozen out
all of
last season.
Yeah, because they wanted his wages off the bill.
They did, yeah. But like, you got to look at it now. And I know, look, when you look at the Ireland setup, he's 34, okay? So there's a huge onus on you.
Sure, if you're good enough,
if you
want
to win,
enough.
Yeah, it's an option. League One.
Will you be sitting on the couch engrossed in Ireland against England, which is also live on Radio 1 this Saturday afternoon, this weekend?
I will be. My wife's English, so...
Don't tell me you're there sledging your poor wife on the couch.
She's heavily pregnant as well.
You're a brave man.
No, I will be, yeah, absolutely, yeah. It's always one of those games where... sometimes I kind of think it's like form goes out the window a little bit. Mm. It's very much, there's more to it. And obviously, you know, with the way the Six Nations has unfolded... like, Ireland would be gunning for this one.
I won't lie to you, I was a little bit surprised when I saw 6 changes. Now, James Ryan is out injured as a result of the HIA last weekend. Gary Ringrose is gone. You've got Jacob Stockdale coming back in. I feel a bit sorry for James Lowe. We're going to hear from Andy Farrell in a sec. Like, James Lowe setting the world on fire for Leinster. And then you look at a slightly different system, a different role in the national side. Mm. But just because, like, I suppose the parallel is you can be great at Europeans and then you go to a Worlds and you realise it's a different ball game, sport altogether.
You look at that across all sports, and even like talking about the soccer team, you know, going from League One, going from Championship, going from Premier League into international is different. Mm. And plus, like, you're in formations, you're in a certain kind of group, a way of playing, and then you're asked maybe to do something different. I think the biggest thing that kind of I looked at it was 6 changes,
new names coming in. Some players been dropped and not even making the match day 23. Like, it's a rotation. He's, for me, Farrell is looking for his perfect 15. He's yet to find that, and I think trying to make these changes is an opportunity within a Championship Six Nations environment.
And the other issue as well is you're planning for a Rugby World Cup ultimately down the tracks.
Absolutely.
And you're dealing with that 7 day to 7 day turnaround.
Yeah.
So you're trying to replicate that in some way, shape or form. But presumably as well, like, I'd love to know what a fellow like Conor Murray has been thinking the last 2 weeks, because he gets injured and the next thing, Jemison Gibson-Park, who's only in the national side a wet week, has massively taken his opportunity. So, you know, there's a psychology to it all as well, though, isn't there?
There is, but I think you hit the nail on the head there. It's that long-term view of building towards a World Cup. And, you know, it's like anything, even the athletics there recently over in Poland. You know, it's all very good going onto the circuit and doing a one-off run with, say, a pacemaker, and you're brought around in a quick time. But then coming into a championship environment where you have to go through rounds, you have to play back-to-back games, all that sort of stuff, you know, physically, mentally, recovery, bounce back ability, whatever way you want to talk about it, yeah, in a term, like, that does come to the fore quite a lot.
So we mentioned there, so there's six changes in all, some of them enforced. So we mentioned that Jacob Stockdale, Bundy Akee and Conor Murray come into the back line. You've Dave Kilcoyne, Josh van der Fleer and Jack Conan all included in the pack. So the team in full, Hugo Keenan at full back, Keith Earls and Jacob Stockdale on the wings, Robbie Henshaw and Bundy Akee, that partnership reunited at centre. Likewise, Johnny Sexton and Conor Murray reunited at half-back. Front row of Dave Kilcoyne, Rob Herring and Tadhg Furlong, Ian Henderson and Tadhg Byrne, who moves into the second row, CJ Stander, Josh van der Fleer and Jack Conan in the back row. The bench, Ronan Kelleher, Keen Healy, Andrew Porter, Ryan Baird, Peter O'Mahony, Jemison Gibson-Park, Billy Burns and Jordan Larmour. Can I talk to you about psychology? So CJ Stander, Ireland are due to play a summer tour in the Pacific Islands this year. So I think they're to play Tonga and Fiji. He said he's available until June. So it's not guaranteed to be his last game for Ireland. It's almost certain to be his last game for Ireland at the Aviva Stadium. How much do you talk at all in a week like this about, let's do this for CJ, let's do this for...
Yeah, like, even go back a step. You know, why was it released? Or why did it come out in the media ahead of this game? You know, was it that internally in their own group that, okay, CJ is retiring?
But it would be leaked, surely, wouldn't it?
Well, that's my point, you know, and maybe that's why. You know, he wants his players, he wants his teammates to know what's going on, that this is going to be his last game for Ireland in Dublin. So it is an occasion. And then obviously release the news to everyone else. And like you said, potentially he may play again. But right now, this is championship. This is big.
This is senior hurling.
This is senior hurling, you know, against the local parish, you know. So it's a big one.
It's Springfield against Shelbyville in the senior championship.
But to be honest with you, I think, like, the gist that I've got from, you know, the Irish setup and the role that CJ has in that, he is very respected. You know, he's a true professional. The way he carries himself, both professionally and privately, I think a lot of the lads look up to him in a way. And I think going into this game against the old enemy, if you like, they'll want to give him the best send off.
Yeah, he is an inherently decent fella. And I've done the interviews at the international matches for the last couple of years. And he's one of those fellas that, irrespective of what has gone on, he will always come over and he'll spend 10 seconds in your company and say hello to you and ask for the family and then walk off again and go about his business. And just little gestures like that. So Ireland against England, 4:45 kickoff on Saturday, live over on RTE Radio 1. It's a massive couple of weeks when you think about the Munster and Leinster contingent. They've just battered their way through a Six Nations. You've the Pro 14 final Saturday week. You've the last 16 of Europe Saturday 2 weeks. You've potentially got the European quarterfinals Saturday 3 weeks.
It's all about squads, isn't it?
It's all about player management. That's why they talk about these 50 players, and I think 52 players have played for Munster so far this season. Leinster had 56 players last year, I think. We have 54 places qualified for the Tokyo Olympics. See the segue there?
Yeah, you've done well.
Thanks. I think the second, Jack Woolley, member of the team. So for people that don't understand, David Gillick qualifies a place for Ireland, but there's not necessarily a guarantee that David Gillick will be the person who'll go to Tokyo. So we have 54 places qualified. We have two athletes who've been officially ratified.
Yeah.
So the big question is, like, I'm increasingly, I was, if you'd asked me at Christmas, I'd have been gone, no, this isn't going to happen. You ask me now on the 18th of March, I'm like, the Olympics are definitely going to happen, but not like we know them.
No. For me, I'd agree. The Olympics will go ahead. Everyone wants it to go ahead. I think the athletes are very much like planning for it. Everything around it is planning for it. It's just going to be different because obviously with the latest news of no overseas spectators, they'll obviously have Japanese spectators. And they've done that over the last couple of months in Japan. There's been various sporting events and they've had small numbers. But again, you can see them trialing it out in a way. But in terms of our own athletes, they're preparing for it. And
They're adhering
to everything that it might be, yeah. Okay? Because you've got it. There's an awful lot of challenges, and these rule books are coming out and playbooks from the International Olympic Council about, you know, what we need to do and how we're going to adhere to it and what's going to happen. But when you boil that down, like the issues, like you can do everything and you can control everything. It can be in your own bubble, but things still can happen. And that's the unfortunate side of it, because for an athlete, they could sit beside someone, you know, they could go into a shop, they could pick it up, and then
you can
they
touch
may
the
not.
Handle of a door exactly. In the departures lounge of an airport.
Yeah, and that's it. And therefore, then they might miss their Olympics. But even go a little bit further, personal coaches, you know, family members, none of those can be there. And also you might look at even when their event finishes, they're gone.
Rio, 11,238 athletes from 207 countries. I think you and I were among 6,000 media were in Rio. I wouldn't fancy being the man to have to try and coordinate all that and try and do it safely. We're going to go to the States and our good friend, actually we're not for just a second. Dave, you keep going there. I just need to change one thing here. See, it's all buttons. Shep, how are you?
I'm doing fine, sir. I just love the fact you made a Springfield versus Shelbyville reference. That touched me.
I know my audience. Can I ask you a very quick question before we? Well, actually, that's why you're here. I can ask you all the questions I want.
Yes.
What is the discussion? What's the narrative around the Olympics and our good friends in the States who presumably will send the mother and father of a team to Tokyo if it goes ahead?
I mean, you know, I thought the discussion you guys were just having was kind of spot on. And look, I mean, you know, one of the topics we've had, you know, discussed on the show is, you know, the different states are doing things differently. I mean, you know, they held the Super Bowl in Florida for a reason. You would not have been able to have the Super Bowl in California, but you could have it in Florida. It went over as a success. There was not some massive giant breakout like everybody predicted that there was going to be. I think, you know, people can, you know, attend sporting events. I think it's wise, though, to, you know, to not have, I mean, you're already going to have thousands and thousands of athletes traveling over there. And you know, if you're going to cut down on family members and entourage and all that other stuff, I think that makes sense until, you know, we're, you know, you got more and more vaccine, you know, distribution out. But I mean, we're doing pretty well with it over here in the States, at least from my perspective. I mean, we've, you know, here in Mississippi where I live, you know, not far from New Orleans, we've already, you know, had about 1 million people vaccinated. So, I mean, that's a little bit less than half the state. So, and they just opened it up to anybody older than 15 or 16 years old in the state. If they want it, they can go get it. So we're starting to see the distribution get out all over the world, you know, just the incredible work that have been done by these scientists. And so I think there's no reason to not have the Olympics. I think it's fine if you want to, you know, limit some of the crowd participation. I understand that, but there's no reason to not have them. I know why we didn't have them last year, but this is not last year. We're not in the same place, you know, and I know some places it's worse than others, but you know, that's probably going to be the case for quite some time.
Yeah, I will not tell you the anger that is chewing in people listening to you talking about the vaccination levels in just one state, but we'll leave that argument for the other day. I'll send you an email about how things are going over here. You mentioned Sure. Your beloved New Orleans has bid farewell to one of its most famous sons.
Yeah, Drew Brees announced he was retiring last Sunday, which, I mean, wasn't, you know, much of a shock. I mean, look, the guy's played for 20 years and had just a remarkable career, 22 seasons, I think. I mean, just an unbelievable career. You know, first ballot Hall of Famer in 5 years. He's either first or second in all of your major NFL passing categories. But really, you know, the impact, you know, for all Saints fans is really what he's meant to us off the field. And he chose the city of New Orleans over a place like Miami. I mean, not a place like Miami. He chose New Orleans over Miami in 2006, you know, several months after Hurricane Katrina just devastated the city, because he felt like he could be part of something bigger than just playing football somewhere. He could be part of the rebuild. And he absolutely, 1,000% has been just a tremendous, you know, role model and citizen in the city of New Orleans. He deserves all the accolades that he's getting. And again, I mean, it's you know, 5 years now, it's a lock. You know, he'll be in Canton making a speech, making everybody cry.
Shep, just going to change tack here a little bit, okay? You're talking about Olympics and we're talking about, you know, sporting events. We do have a massive thing kicking off in the States. The NCAA College Basketball March Madness is coming back. Tell us a little bit about what's happening.
Yeah, so, you know, we didn't have this last year. I mean, you know, we kind of went into lockdown right before, you know, what we call March Madness was getting ready to tip off. And so it is just one of the greatest, you know, events on the American sporting calendar every year. It's 3 weeks long, you know, it's you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you know, 2 weeks in a row. And the following week with the Final Four, it's a Saturday, Monday. And then you go right into the Masters golf tournament. It's just the best time of the year on the sports calendar. Well, obviously, we didn't have it last year. We will have it. It starts today with some of the play-in games. And guys, we're beyond the point. So if somebody gets sick or if there's a COVID outbreak or something happens, you're forfeiting the game. There's no pushing the schedule like this is your team. You're there. They're so serious. They sent six referees home the other day in Indianapolis because they went out to dinner and some of them weren't wearing masks. They contact traced them, and sent them home. So what they're doing this year is, you know, you typically play it at these venues all over the country. They have got all of the teams in Indianapolis or right around Indianapolis in Indiana, which is kind of right in the center part of America. And so the championship game is going to be at where the Indianapolis Colts play their football games. And so that's what we're looking at right now. You've got a team from out west, Gonzaga. For the longest time, they were known as, you know, the school where John Stockton went to college. Bing Crosby also went there, for your older movie fans. But now, I mean, they've gone from what you would typically call like a mid-major school. They're a powerhouse now. They're 26-0, and they're looking to become the first team since 75-76, coincidentally, the Indiana Hoosiers that did that, to go undefeated in the full season. They need six more wins to do that, and they're the perennial favorites this year. But, I mean, it's just great. Buzzer beaters, upsets, you know, it's just so much fun to watch these kids get to live out these lifelong dreams and play for a national championship.
Tanya, you've got the best names for sporting franchises in the world. Shep, we're going to love you and leave you. Thanks for being with us as always. Stay safe.
Thanks, guys.
Come on, Shep with us there from the States. David, thank you very much for your company. It's been the quickest hour of the day, so we've had great fun. Thank you to David Gillick. Thank you to Charlotte Holland, who was our broadcast coordinator. Ronan Lawler produced the programme. We're back tomorrow. Ruby, Dunica, and a whole lot more. Stand by for Conor Bean, who's on the way after news.
With Green Farm. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm on the go chicken bites. 100% natural and packed with protein.